Football Weekly.
Another bumper edition of chart-topping Football Weekly. Today, with more Super Cup action than a dyslexic making an instant meal. With an FA Cup fourth round that left questions flying around like Millwall seats at the KC Stadium. Like, why so many draws? And how long's Tony Adams got at Portsmouth? And why's Rafa very cross on the Mersey? Premier League's back midweek, we preview the big games and the crazy names caught up in the transfer window. Carlton Cole to Juventus, Ibrahimovic to Man City, Joey Barton to FC Vatican City. There's word from France, Spain and Italy. After Beckham's debut goal for Milan, is it goodbye to the galaxy? All that plus your post in Football Weekly. With me today, as we embark on another glorious Football Weekly, is Chief Football Correspondent Kevin McCarra.
Oh, James.
Good morning to you, Kevin. Paul Doyle, welcome back, Paul.
Hi, James.
We've missed you.
Good to see you.
And plenty of people have quite literally missed you. People keep saying, where's Paul Doyle?
Well, here I am.
Here you are, quite literally. And Vice President with special responsibilities for bottle hygiene, it is Barry Glendening.
Hi, James.
Can the pod actually start an actually jar, says Brian the Messiah, along the lines of a swear jar. Last Monday's pod seemed to contain the word two or three times in each sentence. The money raised would wipe out recession everywhere. So, glorious little suggestion there from Brian the Messiah. So we'll keep an eye on that today. I wasn't aware that actually was a major issue for us.
No, I thought we'd a lot of other more major issues, like me going in a Daryl Breen-esque fashion,
right,
between sentences and
a jar for that. Right.
We could have all manner of jars, swear jars, jars, we could actually jars.
Let's have a jar.
Yeah. An indeed jar for me and
a crikey jar.
Crikey jar and
a Sean Ingle crap simile jar, yeah, or a lame analogy
a
jar.
A barrel, I think, for that probably actually. The FA Cup. Sorry, Kevin, you're standing by patiently waiting to talk about
good.
Yes. And you were at Anfield.
I was indeed, where Liverpool drew as they had 6 days earlier against Everton, and yet again they conceded a goal from a set piece to Everton, which I think will particularly infuriate Benitez, who probably imagines himself to be in command of these kind of situations that are you can prepare for. It's a kind of failure of organisation, I suppose, in his mind.
Well, it's extraordinary, isn't it? The one on last Monday was Cahill left absolutely unmarked.
Yes.
When everybody knows what a danger he is. And similar story this time around with Cahill and Lescott.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the goal earlier, Cahill got away from Skirtle, and yesterday it seemed to be Alonso that lost Lescott for the first header, was it? I think it was.
And Cahill as well just wandered
on. Negligent as well, wasn't
it? Was it? I've not seen a replay, but I just watched it in real time. But yeah, it's and also, apart from any defensive failings, it wouldn't matter so much if they were scoring more goals. But it was a kind of throwback yesterday. You felt that if Gerrard doesn't do it, no one will. And it's quite exciting seeing Gerrard kind of grab the game. And also, of course, to be fair, wonderful help from Torres in the goal. But by and large, you felt that the dynamism in this game had to come from Gerrard as far as Liverpool concerned, or the situation was hopeless. To have Rafael Benitez afterwards talking about how much Liverpool have been in charge, well, of course they were. It's Everton who've cost about one-tenth of the money. They're lacking their best creative player, Arteta. And still, Rafa thinks that territorial domination was, you know, a marvellous achievement. I think he was trying to maybe take some of the edge off the disappointment he must have felt about the general lack of life at Liverpool. Towards the end of last month, they looked quite hot, and I thought they were coming on strongly, but now it's back to if Gerrard's got to be the main man.
Wouldn't it be good, though, if they got a big cash injection and Benitez got even more control over the transfers, given how successful De Sena and Robbie Keane have proved?
Were they his transfers?
Well, Robbie Keane was, anyway.
And right.
I don't know where De Sena
And Robbie
came
Keane
from.
Wasn't even permitted to sit on the bench.
Wasn't even in the ground, I don't think.
No. Why was that, do you think?
I think he wants to break Robbie Keane. He doesn't like his mentality, which is he's a bit erratic, hence his frequently erratic finishing. But that same free-spiritedness means that he's occasionally ingenious. That's not what Rafa wants. He thought that's what he wants. He is tired of the lack of reliability. You know, Dirk Kuyt is reliable. You know what you're going to get from him. You're not going to get anything ingenious, but you can get that from Keane. But
I've got to say, Paul, I watched the game last Monday. I literally had forgotten he was on the pitch, Robbie Keane. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I didn't see anything ingenious or clever. And then when he came off, maybe I'm wrong, but he seemed to be swearing and cursing as he left the pitch. Maybe whether he was cursing himself or the bench, who knows? In which case, but that might explain his exclusion yesterday.
I think Rafa Benitez's comments after the game yesterday were very mean-spirited as well, as if to suggest, you know, how dare Everton not let us beat them, you know, the insolence of them and impertinence. So, you know, I sincerely hope Everton beat them in the replay.
Everton complaining of negativity, isn't it?
Yeah, but Everton were missing their two best players, arguably, you know. Hats off to them. And letting Tim Cahill or Cahill score again is just ridiculous.
Just assuming, by the way, Phil Jones.
Actually, Lescott who scored, but.
He
participated in the goal. Everton, I think I'm right in saying, does their entire squad not cost fractionally more than Fernando Torres on his own?
Well, I mean, they did spend $15 million on Fellaini, but he's the only sort of big signing in that. Well, Lescott, right. I suppose, was expensive. But, I mean, but the bargain buy has been Jackie Elka's a fantastic signing for £4 million and allowed to play centre half at last after at Sheffield United being moved to different parts of the team.
Including the goal. There you go. Just to finish off on the Liverpool thing, they're taking on Wigan. They're away at Wigan. Wigan, though, have just sold off a large crop of decent players like Palacios and Emil Heskey. How do we see that one going?
I've given up trying to predict how Liverpool games will go, to be honest. I'm not even going to hazard a guess on this one.
I think they might do better away, actually. There's quite a few teams like that now that seem to cope better away from home and find a bit of space. But that's three draws in a row, two goals in those games, both of them from Gerrard. So a bit more diversity required.
Liverpool and Everton going to need a replay on the 4th of February, I think it is, as will plenty of other teams, because out of the 16 fourth-round games, six have gone to replays, including Aston Villa and Doncaster, who will be facing Liverpool or Everton. Cardiff and Arsenal as well. Cardiff were quite clearly playing to get a replay rather than actually a result, because they fancied the cash money from the Emirates.
Well, yes, and the spectacle towards the end of one of their players running the ball into the corner rather than try and launch an attack of note.
I did find that quite disturbing, actually. Maybe I'm just being romantic. I thought they might try and score the winner.
Well, I mean, the romance of the cup, the famous romance, has just been sucked out of it year by year. And in 5 years' time, I think the FA Cup will be held in even less esteem than, say, the Coppa Italia or the Coppa del Rey in Spain. It's been treated with contempt.
Was the financial acumen shown by Peter Ridsdale then one of the shocks of the round?
Possibly. He's not known for showing financial acumen, is he? So.
Well, there you go. Cardiff still in the competition. Swansea, meanwhile, while on the subject of Welsh teams, with the big result of the fourth round, taking out the holders, Portsmouth. What a change from last year, because it was just down the road, as somebody's pointed out, that they lost against Havant and Waterlooville last season, Swansea. This time they take out the holders. And they've got a home draw against Fulham in the fifth round. Fulham, who scraped by Kettering. Could they do a Cardiff this season, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the Portsmouth thing didn't amaze me that much. They've been a really poor run. They got a draw at Spurs, but Tony Adams was what's a euphemism, a bold appointment to a guy who's done very badly in his previous job, and you give him a Premier League club. I mean, he's really struggling to keep them up, and that's probably a bigger issue than being knocked out of the FA Cup.
How long, people are beginning to question how long he's got now.
Well, that's right. I mean, the table's now so compressed. I mean, if you have any kind of bad run, you're right in the quagmire.
That's true. How compressed the table is interesting, because Fulham have just gone on their record unbeaten run in the top flight, and yet having sold Jimmy Bullard now, they're possible relegation candidates now as well.
I think most teams don't know whether they're trying to get into UEFA Cup or trying to avoid relegation. Yeah. They can't tell, can they? So.
Tony Adams doesn't even seem to, like, whenever he's interviewed, he's very reluctant to even back himself. And has sort of said, well, if I'm not delivering, I'll have to go. And so if he can't even give himself a ringing endorsement, you can't see him spending too long in the hot seat. The one thing I'd have thought, the one thing he'd be good at would be organising a defence, but he can't do that. And I didn't think it was a huge shock that Swansea beat Portsmouth. I sort of had it earmarked as my shock, in inverted commas, of the round.
And you probably won't be too surprised if midweek they lose at home to Villa, who've got an excellent record on the road and are generally flying, have just picked up Heskey. A good signing, do we think?
Yeah, I mean, good for Wigan too. I mean, it's a fair amount of money. It's not as much.
£3.5 million, is it?
It's not as much. Well, it's okay if the bloke they brought in at the sign the transfer window does the job as well as Heskey did it. They've tried to cover for this. But however, Steve Bruce was saying, oh, I wouldn't let him go for, some paltry 3 million, which sure enough is what he's gone for. But I don't think they could have got much more of a player that age with 6 months to go. Either they get nothing for him or they accepted what was an offer. But it does make a lot of sense with Aston Villa, someone like Agbon Lahore playing off him, and Ashley Young being able to find him with crosses. I think it should give Villa even more of an edge.
Before we leave the FA Cup weekend action, Hull had a victory over Millwall, finally resolving Small Talk's favourite question, who would win a fight between Lions and Tigers. The answer probably the Millwall fans, actually, who kicked up and threw seats around, etc., etc., etc. 12 arrests, which doesn't sound like a lot to me, but that's probably all my time in Italian football.
That's because the police now, they don't like to wade in and make arrests. They rely on CCTV footage.
Okay.
So they'll be coming later to knock on people's doors.
Right. Is this more of a regular thing than we realise? It just doesn't get reported that often? Or was this... What sparked it off at the KC Stadium?
Well, I mean,
presence
there was
of Millwall fans, I'd imagine. They damaged seats, damaged toilets. They probably go into a ground, see a toilet, don't know what it is, don't know what to do with it. So the automatic reaction is to smash it, I would suspect.
But was it actually the Millwall fans who...
I don't know about violence in the stadium not being reported. I mean, there was mounted police on the pitch during this match. So if that happens, I think it's always reported. But violence around the stadiums is still a regular occurrence. There's a lot of grounds and it's very rarely reported.
Do Millwall have, I know they have a history of problems, but is this still an ongoing problem for them? It is. I'm getting nods from producer Pete. There you go. Apparently the trouble all started when Jimmy Bullard was presented. Not quite sure why Millwall fans got the hump about that. Should we talk about Burnley taking West Brom to a replay? Creditable stuff there. Barry, you were swift to answer a Burnley fan who criticised us for our lack of applause of Burnley, who narrowly avoided putting Spurs out of the Carling Cup and reaching the final themselves.
I thought we lavished more than enough praise on them. We credited them for a good performance, but the fact of the matter is that they lost against a Spurs team that were punch drunk on the ropes and down and out, every boxing analogy you want to use, and they got beaten. They should have won that game against Spurs in the Carling Cup semi-final, only have themselves to blame for not being in the final, so... I'm not sure what exactly he wants us to do.
I think it says a lot for Owen Coyle, mind you, that they can come back and squally equalise after a game like that against Spurs. I thought it's a really very creditable result. I know West Brom have a kind of glass jaw, but I didn't expect that Burnley would land a punch on it.
Yeah, indeed. So they've had a decent record at home recently as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they've actually had the odd clean sheet, I seem to remember.
So well done to Burnley there. Don't come after me, it's Glendinning you want. More on all these stories, as ever, at guardian.co.uk/football. We've got a little bit more from the Cup in a second as we continue our look forward to the midweek action and the transfers and all that coming up in part two.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Now, Barry, you wanted to talk about the Man United Spurs game, so off you go.
Well, after the game, it was put to Harry Redknapp that Teddy Sheringham and another pundit who I can't remember, but they criticised his side's lack of backbone and said that Spurs looked as if they didn't want to be in the FA Cup. And I think it's there were pundits in giving an actual opinion, sort of vaguely controversial opinion, shocker, you know, that's always refreshing to see. But Redknapp dismissed their talk as rubbish. But it seems patently evident to me, anyway, that his team is completely gutless.
Well, Redknapp himself said that a few weeks ago. He said the only men in the team were the three centre-backs, King, Woodgate and Dawson.
He also said he'd be picking...
Which is a strange motivation approach.
He also said he'd be picking his weakest 11. So presumably the 11 players who did go out for him must have known what he thought of them. It's not exactly motivational.
I find it rather odd. I mean, I'm not speaking up for the merits of Spurs squad, but they did win the League Cup by beating Chelsea last season. I think he talks them down to an astonishing degree, Harry Redknapp, probably because he wants his own players in, and therefore he's saying to the board, look, the situation's hopeless, I must be allowed to make a whole series of signings. But I find it a bit disturbing. If I was a Spurs fan, I wouldn't like to see existing players being written off as if they're nobody. I mean, what good's it going to do Darren Bent to tell him that, you know, Harry Redknapp has been, my wife could have scored that goal or whatever. I mean, that's I think that's not constructive.
Well, he's always incredibly self-serving in the media. He did the same thing when he came to Pompey after replacing Alain Perrin. He just says, this is rubbish, I've inherited a total mess. To make it out like if he achieves even a single victory, it's down to his miraculous touch. And in terms of his transfer dealing, apparently he still wants Kenwyn-Jones for 16 million. I think everyone knows strikers aren't their main problem at the moment. If he has 60 million to spend, he'd be better off investing it in fullbacks, for example. But in L'Equipe this morning, they're talking about how Lyon and Brazil striker Fred, who is that type of big, strong player, is not good enough to win you the Champions League, but he's certainly good enough for a team towards the bottom of the English Premier League. Spurs have been tracking him for a while. He's out of contract in the summer. Lyon are eager to get him off the transfer list or off the wage bill before the end of this month so they can bring in someone else. And they've offered him to Spurs for free. And Spurs are still going to go for Kenwyn Jones, for, apparently. Which
but
is
there's
just
no percentage in free, is there?
What are you suggesting?
I'm not suggesting anything at all. You know what? They're facing Stoke, aren't they, on midweek as Spurs at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excitingly enough, both teams have scored a grand total of 2 goals in their last 6 Premier League games. How interesting that is. But as you say, they're not winning any games. They did have a phenomenal run when he first went in. Portisair says all the current problems at White Hart Lane are a direct or indirect result of one decision, the signing of Darren Bent. He also wants to know what's happened to Zakora and Genus. And if Palacios doesn't settle, Spurs are goosed, suggests Portisair, which is not that wild a shot, given that they're currently on the same points as the bottom three.
They'd probably beat Stoke just because Stoke's away record is so dismal. They haven't won any. I think they've lost 8, drawn 3.
I mean, that's true, but I think this is it's a good chance for Stoke to pick up points here because Spurs are very disjointed at the moment. And if Stoke are one thing, it's not disjointed. They're quite coherent
and jointed,
solid. They're jointed.
Right, yeah.
If any of our listeners fancy winning a T-shirt or a book, or I don't know what the prize is, an offer for You Are the Ref in the Observer, I thought of a good one today. One of the Da Silva twins, say, was suspended and they sent out a ringer, his twin brother, and an opposition player noticed.
Right.
What is the procedure and brought it to the ref's attention? What is the procedure
for verifying the
how do you
identity?
Prove which Da Silva it is on the field?
Boy, that's a really
is
interesting
one
question.
One's left-footed, one's right-footed.
The number on the back of the
shirt. He could wear his brother's shirt.
They wouldn't do that. Underhand behaviour.
Do you know, that's an extremely interesting question. You have to wonder how many times that's happened with footballing twins in the past, or even footballers who just plain looked alike.
Because, I mean, I'm sure I couldn't tell. Their mother could probably tell them apart, but after that, I'd say people would struggle.
All right. United are at West Brom, and Liverpool are at Wigan. Is this going to be the round where United begin to open up a lead, or are Liverpool going to get back on top at this point?
I don't think Liverpool win the league. Right. And if some listener is able to produce evidence of me 2 or 3 weeks ago saying I think Liverpool will win the league, that's more than possible. I've changed my mind so often. I still think Arsenal are in with a squeak of winning the title.
On the subject of Liverpool and their game at Wigan, and I know we're bouncing around from one subject to another in quite clamorous fashion here, but Paul Doyle, Wigan, to fill the Heskey-shaped hole, have picked up Mido from Borough, who will therefore presumably form a strike partnership with that fellow Amir Zaki,
yeah.
With whom he doesn't enjoy the best of relations in the national team. Is that right?
No, apparently not. Well, I mean, they haven't played together for a long
Zaki
time.
Well, Zaki took Mido's place after Zito was basically chucked out of the team, yeah?
Yeah. And they don't play together. I mean, what do you call him? Mido is very good friends with Mohamed Shawki at Middlesbrough, and that was supposedly going to help the two enjoy a tremendously successful relationship on the pitch as well, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
But I think he's a decent signing as a short-term replacement for Heskey, because that's all Mido is ever going to bring, short-term impact.
Okay.
But is Mido so, is his opinion of himself so high that he thought nobody should be picked to replace him when he was thrown out?
Well, it is interesting about his opinion being high, because he was the poster boy in Egypt for a long time, and his wedding was on national TV, live on national TV and everything. But Zaki is now occupying that role, and Wigan matches are screened live in Egypt all the time. So this is the perfect chance for him to try to muscle back into the limelight.
And, wow. Egyptian TV companies must be delighted then at Mido's transfer, are they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Everton Arsenal, now that's really the pick of the midweek round, isn't it? Yes, it is. Everton have shown themselves to be extremely clever at nicking the opportunities and generally playing tight and making the best of their strikerless squad. Do Arsenal, with Robin van Persie on fire, do they have the wherewithal to unpick this toughest of locks?
I tend to go for Everton. I don't, not saying they'll win, but I could see a draw. I think David Moyes is a terrific manager. I mean, yesterday he was talking after the game about trying to make it a top six rather than a top four in England. This is a guy who, you know, if he buys Fellaini, it's because he sold someone else. And he's talking seriously about trying to crack the top of the table on almost nothing. And the fact he doesn't get laughed out of court shows you what a good job he's done. I mean, who on earth imagined Tim Cahill playing as a lone striker? I mean, somebody told me that... Bill Kenwright, you know, was terribly distraught and upset about the loss of Yakubu before the season started. And so I said, oh, it's all right, David Moyes will sort it out. And indeed he did. But whoever thought that Tim Cahill would be the replacement?
Well, Everton currently lying in sixth place Arsenal, but 5 points separate them. I wonder what the situation will be, gentle listener. After the midweek round in which Manchester City will be playing the club they're hoping to take Shay Given from, Newcastle United. Both teams down at the bottom end, although you would regard this as a good opportunity for City to put a bit of distance between themselves and the relegation zone, wouldn't you?
Well, they may regard it as a good opportunity.
They're playing Newcastle at home, Barry. Come on.
Yeah. It's.
They've got in Bellamy. They've got in De Jong.
Yes. Woohoo.
Indeed.
Shouldn't they have bought Shay Given before this match?
You'd have thought.
I mean, it would help their chances of getting 3 points. How much is 3 points
worth?
Well,
I think they've made various offers, but of course those offers haven't been high enough, and whereas money was no object where Kaká was concerned, apparently it is where a decent goalkeeper.
Yeah. I mean, 8 million apparently was their latest offer, but I mean, if the 3 points are worth, say, how much are 3 points worth in the Premier League? I don't know, £2 million?
Depends on how many you have before you get them, I suppose.
The kind of youth policy has been abandoned. I mean,
they had a really good youth team.
Yeah,
they
precisely.
Won the
yeah.
Cup last
I mean, but in terms of goalkeeper, they know what a more experienced goalkeeper. Mika Richards' jacket seems to be hanging in a shugly peg, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, there's talk of Mika Richards possibly being offered up as well in transfer dealings. Yeah.
I also find it strange that Shay Given, who having voiced his lack of content at the shaky defence he's had to work behind and the comical goings on in Newcastle, why would he want to leap out of that frying pan straight into the fire that is Manchester City? Money, obviously, but is there a sort of a top up his pension? But is there any other reason?
The prospects of City have to be better than Newcastle at the moment. Newcastle, the owner is trying to sell them. No one wants to buy them.
And Hull with Bullard, he turned around things for Fulham last season when he went there. Is he going to have a similar impact on the Tigers after their recent slump?
Every chance. I mean, he's a great signing. Again, they gave him a five-year contract. He's aged 30. I don't know how good he'll be in 5 years for them. But in terms of helping add some solidity to midfield this season...
Has he been doing that for Fulham? Because I know
he's been really important for Fulham. He hasn't been scoring many, and he has this trademark free kick he does, which consists of hitting it straight into the wall every time, but he's really part of the reason why they've had such a good defensive record this year. And Dixon Atuhu and Leon Andreasen, who are they've both been out for a long time with injuries, so they're only working their way back, but neither of them look anywhere near Bullard's class at the moment.
Bullard as well, he's supposed to be a real, real nice guy and just a good fella to have around the place.
Right.
And I'd say that could make a hell of a difference too.
And handy if they're planning a Led Zeppelin tribute band, Casey, because he's...
Bullard denying he even got an offer from Fulham, was claiming they didn't try and skip him, wasn't there? Yeah, but it's in contrast with what Hodgson was saying.
Well, I don't know. I remember a few months ago when Hodgson was asked about it, and he's a bit old school, I suppose, and he was... incredibly irate that a footballer would be asking for a contract extension when there's still 2 years to go on his current deal. What is the world coming to?
Well, what indeed. Speaking of which, Dunham is a Zagreb midfielder. Dino Durpic, is it, Barry? Has been put on the transfer list after his Playboy model wife boasted on television that the couple had made love on the pitch at the club's Maximir Stadium. So the club decided to put him on the transfer list. That seems a bit harsh, doesn't it?
Well, apparently he also has a gambling problem.
Oh.
And the club had loaned him money to pay off gambling debts.
Right.
And he was continuing to... frequent casinos and whatnot. So I don't think it was the bonking in the centre circle.
There. Right. This, I have to say, this was at night time. There was no game taking place at that moment.
No, but he had arranged with ground staff to turn the floodlights on late
really?
At night. So he and his model wife could go at it in the centre circle. And anyone who saw England play in the same stadium in the qualifiers for Euro 2008 will know that she isn't the first person to get... in that centre circle.
Well, let's take a little bit of a breather to compose ourselves after that, after which we'll be discussing Italy. Carlton Cole, the yellow news ticker says, Juventus making inquiries. I can't see this happening. I know he's doing really well, and people are even talking about him for England. Crazy people like Paul Doyle. He's an Ireland fan, not uncoincidentally. Four goals in four games, isn't it? Now
I think it's five and six.
Is it?
Yeah. And he's playing really well. He's doing everything Emil Heskey can do.
Right.
And score, which Emil Heskey can't do.
Which
to my mind, makes him
face,
England material. Well, no, he didn't. He was going for the ball, as was the keeper, and he was a little bit clumsy. But that's the one thing is he's been lacking in the last few years. I mean, despite his imposing physique and power, he's not a particularly aggressive person. And sometimes you get the feeling the manager should beat him with sticks beforehand or something just to get him worked up and angry, because then he'd be much more...
Starve him for a week or something before.
Something like that, bit of hardship.
He does seem a more mature player, doesn't he, though? Just general demeanour.
Yeah, I mean, he's only 25, but he's played very little football so far in his career, which I think is one of the reasons why he hasn't yet fulfilled his potential. He's only played 80 matches.
I think this talk of Carlton Cole playing for England is absolutely
What about playing for Juventus, though? Because he was with Claudio Ranieri, presumably,
at
Chelsea. And Juve, they don't have young strikers particularly. Jovinko, who's not really a striker, has not worked out as well as they'd have hoped. And there was all sorts of fuss when they took off Del Piero for him on the weekend. Del Piero particularly causing fuss by throwing his jacket to the ground in disgust. He later claimed that he was just upset because they'd handed him Jovinko's coat, and Jovinko's only about 4 foot, so you can see why that would upset you. But I mean, Del Piero is a certain age now, and Mauri's I think only about 28 or so, but who else? You got Trezeguet, who's gone past his 30, so there is certain logic to that. Yeah, Quinter as well, not the youngest.
Quick question for you, James. And Juventus are also doing well, but somebody said to me it's still the old guys that Del Piero they depend on. Is that true?
Del Piero's been amazing.
Is that true or is there a younger thrusting element?
Still the old guys like the referees they depend on, certainly the last Saturday when they beat Fiorentina had a stonewall penalty denied. Right, they also had a goal ruled out for some bizarre decision. I would never quite fathom what it was. So Juve was somewhat lucky to get past Fiorentina on Saturday night. Big clash, of course, that one. They remain thus 3 points behind the leaders. Inter, who beat Sampdoria on Sunday night, 1-0. A goal from Adriano, only his second in the league of the season. Jose Mourinho was sent to the stands after complaining to the referee, although I think Sampdoria feel they had rather more to be upset about with the officiating. Ibrahimovic has been mentioned in connection with Man City. I like his answer. He says, I'd have to ask God first. Bit of a reference there to chum across town. Kaká, who had a brilliant performance, and well done to me for tipping that Bologna might pull an upset while everyone was distracted by the happy conclusion of the Kaká business. Kaká instead turned on the style Sunday afternoon at Bologna, scored two, one of them was a penalty, and above all played brilliantly up front with Pato, who didn't score who scored the other? Seedorf got one, and David Beckham.
Good shot.
It was.
Now, bad goalkeeping.
Well, I thought he took it well.
It hit it well, but I think
Milan's fourth goal. Now, Kaká, as I say, played brilliantly up front, and there is this suggestion with Ronaldinho being benched that the conclusion of all the Man City talk, one of the effects of that has been that Ancelotti has now got free rein to just drop Ronaldinho and play with Pato and Kaká, as he's much happier doing. Beckham, though, has stolen all of the headlines, and the goal has been followed by his first half-hearted admission that he might not be going back to the Galaxy in March, when he'd always said he was due to. He says, I have a contract, but we'll see. For now, my home is Milan.
Would it cost him a huge amount of money to cancel that contract? Ancelotti have said it all depends on Beckham whether he cancels the contract with Galaxy or not.
I think he would have to take a significant wage cut, but it's hard to say, because those figures that were handed out when he first moved to LA, a lot of that was potential earnings through sponsors and the like. But Milan certainly wouldn't be looking to. I think that's one of the dangers for Milan, that it could in some way spark another round of pay rises. Galaxy as well. I mean, even the Americans are leaving Galaxy. Landon Donovan heading off to Bayern Munich now. So how much interest Beckham will have in staying there to make up the numbers, I'm not sure. And Galaxy as well, there's talk that they might not have the money and they'd be quite happy to be free of his contract. So I don't think, I didn't think it was that likely he'd be staying, but that does seem to be the way it's heading. Just to mention equally that Roma had a 3-0 win at the San Paolo. Napoli were previously unbeaten at home this season. Roma now moved to within 3 points of the top four. But if they go into the Champions League, apparently they won't be doing it with Christian Panucci, who was offered a place on the bench, 35-year-old defender this weekend, but replied that he wasn't interested very much and would now be leaving the club forthwith as the manager doesn't respect him. So there you go. Apparently he might be heading for Torino. And I should also mention across town at Lazio, they got absolutely destroyed by Cagliari. 4-1, all four goals from Cagliari. That was at Lazio's home ground, Stadio Olimpico. And all four goals coming in the first half, they're absolutely ripped apart, Lazio, and trouble brewing there. A lot of unrest among the fans, strangely enough. And there's a full round of action coming up on Wednesday, which we can talk about, Barry, if you like, on Thursday morning. Ooh, Roger Palmer says, can anyone explain or justify why the away goals rule was not applied after 90 minutes on Wednesday in the Carling Cup semi-final between Burnley and Tottenham? You've just nodded your head, Barry. Can you explain?
No, I can't.
All right.
It's just a bizarre rule.
That's the rule.
So why are there no? Why doesn't the Carling Cup use the same rules as every other football tournament?
I don't know. It's like they couldn't decide what way to manage, so they settled on a compromise that pleases nobody, really. I mean, Burnley won that tie fair and square.
Burnley would have gone through.
And Tottenham had an extra half hour to score for no apparent reason.
So it didn't please nobody.
It doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. So no, I can't explain it, to answer the poster's question.
Right.
And I'd be very surprised if anyone else can either.
Just Way's got a transfer question. He says, if City were prepared to pay £100 million for Kaká, why did they turn down £135 million as the asking price for Villa plus Silva? Seriously, you get two of the top 10 players in the world, aged 27 and 23, who with Rabinho give you an awesome front three. Obviously, in the real world, they're not worth £135 million combined, but in the real world, Kaká isn't worth £100 million either.
Yeah, so not marketing. I think Kaká is eminently more marketable than Silva.
Good answer, Kevin. All right. AC Jimbo, in your opinion, asks Kaká for Kingstonian. In your opinion, which stadium in the world has the best atmosphere? I just got back from Buenos Aires and saw Boca play at the Boca Negra. Absolutely amazing. Kevin, you've been to far more stadia than I. What's your pick?
I'm biased.
Maximir Stadium in Dnipro is doing his business. That must be pretty electric.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the Maximir Stadium is quite a passionate place, for example. But I couldn't, I mean, I used to go to Hamden and 100,000 people in it playing England, so it's hard to compare with.
Well, might be it then.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, right. And also some of the European games involving Celtic, you know.
Right. Fantastic. Paul, I bet you've got a cracking answer involving some far-flung African outpost to the game.
No, I was just going to say the Velodrome where Marseille play. Oh, right. That's rocking when on a big night.
Yeah. Spurs. Ton says, oi, Glenn Denning. No, Spurs have posted that. You were saying that it was all Joe Lewis's money. He says Joe Lewis is not bankrolling Spurs. They've posted a profit every year since Enoch took over. If you didn't take O-level economics, which as you explained afterwards you didn't, it's basically the only people bankrolling Spurs' ridiculous transfer policy are the fans, sadly. And Mr. Gareth E, on a Spurs note, was disappointed at Sean's naive comments about the Spurs chanting for Campbell. But that's a long story, which I don't think we have the time to get into right now. Not when we got Sid Lowe on line one. Sid Lowe, quite literally
Hello.
In Spain. Hi, Sid.
How are you?
I'm very well. What have you got to tell us about today?
Well, I suppose the big thing, really, that everybody's been talking about this weekend was Leo Messi. Because Messi was fantastic again. Barcelona won 4-1 at the weekend. A little bit lucky in so much as the referee very, very generously disallowed a Numancia goal. But then Messi in the second half really turned on the style. And the reason that's so significant is because it comes off the back of a week in which the Madrid press has been talking about Leo Messi going to Real Madrid, becoming another Luis Figo case. Now, for me, the surprise wasn't that Madrid press did that, because, of course, we all know that they quite like their role as troublemakers. They quite like their role as trying to wind up people in Barcelona. The surprise really was how much it worked. People in Barcelona are genuinely getting a bit edgy about this. Messi scored a couple of great goals, could have got a hat-trick, provided an assist, and after the game said, I will never leave Barcelona, which has led the Barcelona press to jump up and down in kind of indignant self-righteousness and say, see, he's not leaving, he loves us. He's definitely not going anywhere.
Well, that's excellent news for Barcelona. I say he and Alves outstanding again then in that 4-1 win over Numancia.
Yeah, Alves was absolutely brilliant, and you catch me as I'm finishing off a column in which I'm obviously going to wind a few people up, but I think Dani Alves is the second best player in the world right now. I think he's absolutely brilliant. This is a guy that Chelsea didn't want to pay too much money for, because I mean they were close to offering 30 million and the deal was pretty much done with Sevilla, and what happened was that it got back to Abramovich and he said, well, hang on a minute, he's just a defender. Oh dear, he's anything but a defender, Dani Alves, and I just think he's a fantastically good player and really has made a huge difference to Barcelona this year.
If he's the second best in the world, Just skimming past your point that he's anything but a defender. Do you mean he can't defend, or that he's everything?
No, he does defend. He brilliantly, and lots of other things so too. Much more than that. Yeah.
All right. If he's the second best in the world, who do you put at number one?
Oh, well, right now I don't even think there's any doubt that Leo Messi's the best in the world. I really do
Apparently
think
there
that,
is some doubt about that. That
I just don't think there's a debate at the moment.
Right.
Leo Messi is playing unbelievable football every single week. Now, obviously, the two candidates, I suppose, that are closest to him, if we're going to go by recent award ceremonies, are Fernando Torres, who spent a lot of this season injured.
Cristiano Ronaldo,
who's obviously been injured a bit, and there's a feeling that he's perhaps not quite as happy as he should be. So right now, I just honestly don't think there's any doubt.
Well, all right, good to know. Thanks, Sid. How many points do they clear at the moment, Barcelona?
12, because Real Madrid keep on winning. And this is actually something that's been going back for the last couple of years to some extent, but Real Madrid have good players, and therefore they almost always manage to snatch a goal, even though they're not playing great football. And this is, as I say, going back a couple of years, that Barcelona have played very good football and not always won, although this year, of course, they're winning week in, week out. And Real Madrid keep on winning without doing very much. Another 1-0, another absolutely awful match, but amazingly, since they were beaten in the Clásico at the Camp Nou against Barcelona, Real Madrid have won every game, and they're keeping clean sheets. They're looking relatively solid. They still don't look like a great football team, but they certainly look like a team who should make Liverpool a little bit worried.
My word. And that's all with Juan de Ramos, eh?
Well, exactly. And Ramos, I wouldn't go so far as to say that the Spanish are falling in love with him, because that's definitely not true. And I've heard a couple of comments in the last week saying that the Spanish press, the one thing they agree on is that Juan de Ramos has got to stay. That's just not true. That's complete nonsense. There's really no comment at all about Ramos. There's just a kind of quiet belief that, yeah, he's doing a good job considering the situation. Mm. But then, you know, we're back a bit to what we were talking about after the Camp Nou game. They were beaten 2-0 and everyone said, well, that was okay. Well, it's not really okay, but given that Madrid seems to have touched rock bottom, it was. The question mark is, how long do Madrid fans and the press put up with 1-0 victories playing awfully? Because there's already a little bit of a whisper of discontent that, hang on a minute, we should be doing rather more than this.
Interesting. And Valencia, meanwhile, who were up there despite their many off-field problems, getting humbled 3-1 at Mallorca, who are right down the bottom. Are Valencia's off-field woes catching up with them at last, or what?
Well, I don't think it's very difficult to know for sure to what extent that's having an impact. I think it does mean that there's a level of insecurity about the club. There's a sense of everybody kind of not being sure exactly what the future is. But I think in footballing terms, Valencia are not that unstable. They've got a very, very intelligent coach. They've got a good squad. And I think they all recognise that they just need to play as well as they can. And at the end of the season, they'll see, or at such a time as Valencia are forced to sell. But right now, I don't think that's an immediate problem. For example, I don't think there's anywhere near as big a problem for Valencia in terms of the players' mindset as it is at Mallorca, where players genuinely don't know what's going to happen from one day to the next. I think Valencia's players know that pretty much until the end of the season, this is the squad, then they may move on. I still think Valencia have a good enough team, a good enough coach, and relative stability in the football side of things purely to get a Champions League place this season. And frankly, I still think they're better to watch than Real Madrid right now.
Mm. Well, there you go. Excellent. Sid, thank you very much for that.
Cheers.
Thanks, Sid.
Bye.
Paul Doyle, just before we pull the shutters down on this extraordinary Football Weekly. France, what's going on there?
Well, as you probably know, Lyon are still top, but there's four or five teams within striking distance, which is very unusual for this time of year. Lyon are very much a team on approaching the end of an era, and new manager Claude Puel is struggling to prolong that era. They seem to have adopted the Spurs approach to in the transfer market. It's been a very static transfer market in France so far. Probably the biggest signing is the fact that Laurent Blanc has extended his contract as Bordeaux manager. Bordeaux possibly the most likely to supplant Lyon at the top. But Lyon have big problems of full-backs, where both their first-choice full-backs are out injured and they're having to play teenagers there. The expectation was that they'd address that in the transfer market. Instead, they're looking for a new striker. One of the main reasons is because they're facing Barcelona in the Champions League and they seem resigned to the fact that they're going to concede a hatful and that the only way to get through maybe by outscoring Barcelona. So they want someone to help Benzema, basically. Marseille, similarly, problems at the back, but they went for a striker. They spent most of January courting Henrik Larsson, couldn't get him, so went for another golden oldie, less golden, I'd suggest, Sylvain Viltor, who they've signed, and they hope that he'll provide the firepower they have to finish at least second in the league. That was their target, and otherwise heads will roll at the top, as ever. PSG are doing very well on the pitch and imploding in the boardroom, as is their wont.
Oh, are we actually going to see a different champion this time after seven? Is it seven seasons?
I'd go Lyon? For Bordeaux, yeah. and I think Blanc should be the next France manager.
Right. Interesting. Very good. Well, thanks for that, Paul, and for all your participation today. And to you, Kevin McCarra, and you, Barry Glendinning. Technical support, Ben Fellow. Producer, Pete. And you there at home, or indeed at the office, for listening, or perhaps in between the two on a mode of transport. We'll be back on, what is it by now, Thursday, with Football Weekly Extra. So hopefully you'll be joining us for that. And bye for now in the meantime.